Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, how's it going? Your team is in the NBA Finals. I have not watched a single game. They are in the NBA Finals, right?
Yes, they're in the NBA Finals. They're up 3-0. Looking for the sweep tomorrow, or Friday, or today, if you're listening on the day this podcast comes out. It's been, I know everyone's talking about how it's been kind of a cupcake, easy ride for them to get here. And, Luke is hurt and whatnot, but whatever, they can only beat the teams that they play. So I'm just happy for guys like Al Horford. That dude deserves a championship. It's been fun. Hopefully they can wrap things up tomorrow. We don't have to worry about recording during game 6 next Thursday.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we've started each of the last two podcasts off with basketball talk, so we'll move on.
From there. We can do more. We can just do this whole. We'll go to relievers. Yeah,
we're gonna have to start 3-pointer list. Did you see did you see the new City Connect jerseys?
No, I don't think. Which ones? Oh, the Twins ones. Yes.
What do you think of those?
I like those. I like weird jerseys. Sometimes it can be a little weird, but the Twins, I think, are pretty fresh.
Yeah, they weren't one of the worst ones I saw, but I hate City Connects with the blue pants. I think it it always makes it look like pajamas, which, technically baseball uniforms are pajamas, but it just makes them look more so like that. And then I also felt like the yellow was a weird accent color. I saw some mock-ups with red or green. Green was made it look more Minnesota Timberwolves, and red was more
twins. I saw the green one. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Okay, yeah. The hat's kind of nice. The uniform, blue pants is definitely it's like a pajama. It's something. A lot of you ever watch the Caribbean winter leagues, or they have red pants, blue pants. It's all over the place. And
they look crazy.
I think the hats look nice though. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think if they did white pants and red accent instead of yellow, it would have been much better. But nonetheless, I still think they avoided being in the bottom most tier of City Connect jerseys. We review those on my personal podcast every time they come out. So we've been, stacking up a pretty decent tier list. So I think once we have all of them, which the second Dodgers one that comes out later this year should be the final one we get because the Yankees and A's aren't going to be doing one. So I think we are getting near the end of City Connect and we'll be able to have a true tier list.
What's the, as of right now, what's the worst one you have?
The original Dodgers one. That one was so bad.
Dodgers. Yeah.
It says Los Dodgers on it. They got blue pants. Yeah. They already have a Los Dodgers jersey, so there was no creativity there. The blue pants look terrible, and then the hat also says Los Dodgers, and it was so bad that they stopped wearing it. It was one of the worst hats I've ever seen, and the whole thing was so bad that they are the only team getting a second one, which I think tells you everything you need to know about that one. But I am not a fan of that one. I think the Cardinals one was also terrible.
Yeah, that's very uncreative all around.
With
the Dodgers.
Yeah, that one's just, even the Cardinals one, that one's just the original jersey. They just changed the name on it. And now it's a bathroom, but instead of the Cardinals, which I'm like, okay, whatever you want. But
that one's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we got let down, honestly. There were so many opportunities for great jerseys, and we really only got a handful of ones that I was like, yes, let's go. That's awesome.
Yeah, right. Some of them are just not that interesting, and some of them are just baffling. Some of them really don't make sense. So, there really has only been a good a couple that have been this is awesome. They should wear this as their alternate. But it's
totally
been a little bit of a letdown from what they had promised. Yeah.
Well, at least it's ending, so we know there's gimmick on the way for the next set of jerseys, but I think it's time to get into the reliever talk. Today, we're going to be discussing, as always, the news, injuries, and transactions from the past week. Then we'll move over to discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. And then we'll wrap things up with our main topic as we check back in on the early breakouts from April and see how they've been doing since then. And if they've either created a new baseline for us to judge them off of, or if they've continued what they did in the first half or in April, or maybe some of these guys even improve. So we'll be checking in on those, but we'll start it off with the news. And Andrés Muñoz returned for one appearance on Sunday before heading straight back to the bench. He had been out for a few days, and he's pitched now just once since June 4th. That's a 9-day span during which he's pitched just once. He had an injection in his lower back on Wednesday. That was a couple days ago. To help with the soreness. And he also had an MRI, which revealed no major issues. So it sounds like Munoz is going to avoid an IL stint, though I'm not sure when he's going to be able to return to the mound.
Yeah, it looks like at this point, they probably would have been better off just, you know, having him miss 15 days. And, you know, at this point, only having one appearance in 9 days, it's, not really sure if they have, they haven't really, you know, done the right thing here, but we don't really know if he's going to be available this weekend. So if you have, like, we talked about this last weekend with him, it's, you know, he was supposed to be available and he did pitch one of those games, but, you know, he only came in for a hold. He came in the eighth inning, didn't really help out in save only leagues too much. So I think I would sit him this weekend. And I just feel like there's this early in the season, I know the Mariners are like in the thick of things when it comes to, you know, wild card and division positioning, but it's still June. It's early June. I think you gotta be safe with your all-star closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we can be confident he's going to remain as the closer, because in that one game he returned, he pitched in the eighth inning. However, it was against the 9-1-2 batters in the lineup. I don't remember which team he was facing. Nonetheless, I think that suggests that he's at least somebody that they trust in high leverage, even when he's returning from an injury. So I don't think we should be concerned about his role when he does return. We'll move over to our injuries. And in a similar vein, Emilio Pagan was placed on the 15-day IL by the Reds with a right lat strain. This one's similar to Munoz, because Pagan returned for one day after missing more than 2 weeks with a triceps injury, and he returned for one game and now is right back to the IL. I would assume he's going to be out for, I mean, obviously at least 2 weeks, but that's one of the top setup options in Cincinnati. So that means Fernando Cruz and Lucas Sims are going to be the top two setup options for closer Alexis Diaz.
Yeah. And, you know, Sims has been working his way into more. He's been getting a couple saves here and there. He's kind of the most trusted reliever they have outside of Alexis Diaz, and it's still Fernando Cruz is the better option, but they just like the role that he's in. I don't think he's ever gonna really have a chance to get saves here, because for whatever reason they're obsessed with Lucas Sims, and they use him in high leverage spots all the time, despite him having a 14.3% walk rate. Lets up a lot of hard contact, and the whiffs just aren't there like they used to be. I don't really, you know, trust Sims that much for holds leagues purposes, but he is the one getting opportunities right now in that bullpen outside of, you know, Diaz and occasionally Cruz. So, I guess deeper leagues, NL onlys, if you need to chase holds, Sims is an option. I'm not really a big, you know, a big fan of what he has nowadays. It's been a couple of years since he was really that dominant reliever. Even last year, we talked about it, you know, early on before the season started, how he was kind of one of the more lucky relievers last year. So that ERA and WHIP don't really tell the whole story of his 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's had an xFIP over 5 for each of the last 3 seasons. So And on top of that, he's pitching in Cincinnati. So I don't think he's somebody we can really trust. But like you said, if you're desperate for holds, there's a guy for you. We'll head over to Baltimore and talk about our final injury, as Danny Coulomb was placed on the 15-day IL with left elbow inflammation. He underwent an MRI and he's confident he'll avoid an extended IL stint. Brian Baker was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. So it sounds like Coulomb will be back in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, Seattle Perez will become the team's top left-handed option in the bullpen.
Yeah, another one that I'm not really, I mean, he probably is going to get you a hold, at least one hold a week, at least while Coulomb's out, but I'm not someone I would go chasing necessarily. It's not, you know, strikeout rate's not great. Whiff rates aren't really doing anything to get you excited. So it's mostly just a hold and wait until Kuliyama's back. It sounds like it's going to be just the minimum stay. And then they say that all the time and it never is, but at least, you know, it doesn't seem like it's going to keep him out for a month. So he should be back by some point in June. And yeah, that bullpen had starting to get, you know, clicking with Cano is pitching well right now. Kimbrel's pitching well right now. Kuliyama's been good all year. So that trio is really, you know, was turning around things around here, and it kind of hurts to lose him right now.
Especially to a elbow injury. Those are always concerning. Yeah. So fingers crossed there on Kulam. We'll move over to our transactions. Colin Poche of the Rays was activated from the 15-day IL. He had been out with mid-back tightness. Richard Lovelady was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, but Poche should become one of the top left-handed options. Garrett Clevinger has sort of surpassed him, and Poche's struggles before the injury sort of knocked him down the holds ladder. He's had 2 saves and 4 holds, though, but he does have a 5.11 ERA and a sub-15% strikeout rate. Do you think Poche's cooked, or do you think he can work his way back into the top left-handed option role he had for the last couple of years?
I mean, Clevinger stuff's a lot better. I think they definitely have a trust in Poche. They trusted him a lot last year. 12 wins last year, ton of holds. The thing with Poche is he doesn't really, he just throws a fastball. I mean, he has kind of been throwing the slider a little bit more, but it's not particularly great. It does a job, but he's really just he throws 91 with a fastball, and that's kind of his go-to. And yeah, I still like Clevinger a lot better. If you want to speculate on any of these Rays lefties, it's been an unusually, you know, poor. I kind of wrote about the Rays bullpen a little bit today. It's just been a bad season for the Rays in general, and they're not getting a ton of help from their bullpen this year. When it comes to, you know, Clevinger has been struggling lately. Phil Maton has been just terrible. Was one that we were thinking that, oh, the Rays getting him, it's gonna, you know, he's gonna be a closer by the end of this thing, and then yeah, he's been terrible. So Poche is another one who's just, he's only been 12 innings so far, but it's been a pretty bad 12 innings. So I'm probably staying away from him until he starts showing something.
Definitely. We'll move over to Texas, where the Rangers activated Brock Burke from the 60-day IL. He had missed at least 2 months with a broken right hand, which I'm surprised they kept him out for that long because he is a lefty. But nonetheless, he wouldn't be able to catch anything if he had a broken hand. Grant Anderson was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Burke is probably not somebody that's going to be rostered in many leagues. However, he is the top left-handed option in the Rangers bullpen with guys like Jonathan Hernandez and Jose Leclerc ahead of him. So I don't think it's out of the question that he could move up. He's thrown just 3 innings this year, and he allowed a couple runs in that time. But back in 2022, he was one of their most trusted relievers with a sub-2 ERA and a strikeout rate over 27%. But it feels like he sort of regressed back to what he was before.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. He probably surpasses Lats in like the pecking order for as far as lefties go, but I'm not so sure he's better than Lats. Burke's kind of a, you know, he doesn't fill up the box score. If he's going to do anything, he's going to help you with ratios and the occasional hold. But just, you know, in that bullpen in general, he's, you know, after Robertson and Leclerc, it's really wide open for, you know, a potential third holds option there. Leclerc's been really good lately, by the way. He's, I know the ERA is still 4.44, but he's been really good as of late. And, there's someone to keep an eye on in holds, or maybe even saves leagues down the line.
Yeah, it looks like Leclerc across his last 12 innings has allowed 1 run, which is a 0.75 ERA, and he struck out 16 batters against 3 walks during that time. So that's definitely an improved version of Leclerc, and that's a big positive for a Rangers pen that has really been lacking in depth and lost one of their top guys, the closer for their World Series winning team. So having Leclerc in there really gives them a lot more options in the back end. Maybe Burke can work his way in there as well. Remaining in the AL West, the A's activated Lucas Urseg from the 15-day IL. He had missed time with right forearm tightness. It seemed like it was going to be more concerning considering the nature of forearm injuries. However, he is back in just about the minimum time. Michael Ohtañez was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, and Urseg should recover the top setup option role in Oakland that he had before getting injured.
Yeah, there's only him and Austin Adams really as options, and Adams has been struggling lately. I think Urseg has a little bit more strikeout upside, so he's definitely the better option and holds leagues. Is this a typo? But I'm looking at Fangraphs and it's got Urseg and Adams both at 22.2 innings and both with a 3.57 ERA, which is kind of crazy.
It looks right to me.
Wow. Okay. So they're both at exactly the same as far as innings and ERA. But yeah, Urseg's got a little bit better strikeout rate, and that shows in his stuff. I mean, Adams throws that frisbee slider, and it's a good pitch, but Urseg has a little bit more velo, and he has been throwing his slider a little bit more this year, and it's gotten more whiffs for him.
Yeah, he's going to be a pretty great option in holds leagues, and I think he's going to be pretty underrated because he pitches for the A's, but that 30% plus strikeout rate and all the vulture saves he's going to get when Mason Miller rests are going to be pretty valuable. We'll move over to Miami, where the Marlins activated JT Chargois from the 60-day IL after he missed time with neck spasms. Emmanuel Ramirez was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, and Chargois doesn't have too much competition considering how bad the Marlins bullpen has been this year, but Chargois hasn't really pitched at all this year. He's got 1 1/3 innings, and that happened yesterday on Wednesday, and last year he was pretty good, the year before as well, and the year before that. So he's had three straight years of pretty solid production, though he's not a big strikeout arm, which may take away from his fantasy value, especially if he's not racking up holds. So is Chargois somebody you're going to be placing on your watch list in deep holds leagues, or are you not really considering him?
Yeah, I think it could be interesting, an interesting watch list name, because he's really flashed in the past, and we don't really know. The Marlins, for all we know, I mean, they could be moving on from a lot of people in the rotation, the bullpen. It could be a lot of changes, so that could open some things up for him or anyone, really.
I think he might be one of their trade options.
Yeah, I mean, he could be if he shows, you know, he has like a month or so to, you know, prove something, and then they could flip him. That could, you know, maybe he goes to a team where he sees more consistent holds options because it's a better team and they're, you know, their bullpen's a little bit light. But for now, it's kind of tough to see him. You know, they're still trusting Bender. He came in the seventh inning today up to, not sure, you know, he's been pitching a little bit better, but I'm not really sure why they trust him over some guys like Nardi or Fauché. He's been even better. But yeah, the Chargois could work his way back into that mix, especially after Tanner Scott's traded.
All right. And we'll go to the White Sox, who activated Steven Wilson from the 15-day IL. He missed time with a back strain. Tim Hill was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And Wilson was sort of the best reliever in the White Sox bullpen prior to his injury, pitching to a sub-3 ERA and a, you know, low 20 strikeout rate, which isn't great, but the sub-3 ERA is the best in that bullpen. He also racked up 6 holds, which before he got injured was one of the top marks in Chicago. But Steven Wilson, is he somebody that you're going to be considering in holds leagues, or is the lack of wins and a little bit of competition in Chicago keeping you from doing that?
Yeah, this team is really, I mean, I know they were going to be bad, but it's turned into like just a dead zone for save plus holds options, unfortunately. I mean, Leisure's pitched a lot worse as of late. I don't know how much longer he lasts as a holds option there or a setup guy there. So then it's like, you know, Brebbia and Wilson behind Kopech. I guess, yeah, Wilson could factor into some more holds, but it's just kind of a bleak outlook no matter how you look at it here of the lack of wins this team's, you know, giving you.
Totally. All right. And our last transaction was from the Mets, who activated Edwin Diaz from the 15-day IL. He missed the last 2 weeks with a right shoulder impingement. Danny Young was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, and Diaz is confirmed to recover the closer role once he pitches again. I don't think he has pitched yet today. When did that Mets game start?
No, it's going on right now. It's 2-1. Marlins. So. Oh. Yeah, I know. I was hoping. So he got dropped in one of my points league that, like, you know, relievers don't really get the same value. But I picked him up because, you know, if he's right, it's nice to have. I like to at least have one closer in that league just so you can, you know, have the chance to get some points from a pitcher like every day, no matter, or whenever, you know, whenever they're going. It kind of helps round out the staff. So Yeah, I'm optimistic. I mean, a lot of the stuff he was dealing with before this injury or this IL stint, I guess, is a safer term. He's warming up right now. Yeah, he's warm. So it looks like he's going to pitch either way. But yeah, I think, you know, it was a lot of bad luck, and that's not to say that it was only bad luck, because I feel like this is kind of what Edwin Diaz was. But last year was a little bit of an anomaly, and he has two of those seasons now where he was just absolutely untouchable and luck was on his side. But I feel like he, and similar to like Josh Hader, they go through these like spurts where it's like, oh man, are they going to like lose the closer role forever? And then they come back and dominate for like 3 months. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's the guy we know. So I feel like he'll be fine. And if you know, this is probably the last, you know, the window's closing on being able to, you know, get him for lesser value than what he's worth, because I think he'll be fine the rest of the way. And it's probably a good time for, because he, you know, coming back from not pitching last year, it probably would have been tough for him to go like 70 innings or close to that. So, you know, taking this little break should also help keep his innings down a little bit and keep him fresh the rest of the way.
Totally. Yeah, I'd be buying low everywhere. He's got a 63% left on base rate. For his career, he's around 80%. He's got a 26% home run to fly ball rate. For his career, around 14%. The BABIP is pretty normal, but for guys like this, similar to Hader, it's the home runs that always come back to bite them. And when every single fly ball, when a quarter of your fly balls are leaving the park, that's pretty unlucky. And so I think Diaz is going to turn things around. I mean, you could just look at the 35% strikeout rate and know that not much has changed. Even if he's not the, you know, number one overall closer for the rest of the season, getting a top 10 or top five closer is not something you can usually do for a discount. So go out and get Edwin Diaz while you still can. Next, we're going to discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We're entering our three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks. Go check them out on pitcherlist.com. Closing Time is the article. Comes out every single week. What day of the week, Rick?
Closing Time is out on Tuesday. Tuesday. and the holds are out Thursday. Saves plus holds are out Friday. Right. It's weird because I write it on Monday night and Tuesday morning. So I'm trying to figure. Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah. Go check that out next Tuesday for the most recent edition, and go check out the last one and all the previous week's editions if you'd like as well. But we'll start with the closers rising the ranks, starting with Trevor Megill of the Brewers, who just continues to be very solid. And wasn't he dealing with an injury last week or something?
He had something. I don't think it was an injury.
He got like removed from the game. He got hit by a comebacker, didn't he?
Oh, that was a little while ago. Yeah.
That was multiple weeks ago. Okay. Well, yeah. he's proven no side effects from that.
Yeah. He's been fine since then. And this is kind of, you know, we had that mailbag question last week. I was like, I don't really know how to rank him, and it's him and the rest of these guys on this list. It's, a group that I don't know how long they're going to close for, and I don't know what, you know, so it's hard to figure out where to rank them. But Megill, I think it depends on your league context and like head to head leagues, points leagues. I think, you know, Megill, Tanner Scott, Yimi Garcia, those guys, you know, are more valuable maybe than, you know, David Bednar or Camille Duval or Raisel Iglesias or, you know, some of those middle. You know, we don't really know what we're going to get for the rest of the season from them, even if they are closing. In roto leagues, you probably still want the security from a Helsley and Bednar and Iglesias. But, you know, Megill has just been so good, and it's going to be a shame if he's not closing the rest of the year, because really since he took over the closer job and, you know, got his first save, he has a 35% strikeout rate and a 3.3% walk rate, which is kind of amazing to me, because he doesn't look like he's got the best command in the world, and it's more of a control versus command thing with him. He doesn't walk people, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's always hitting his spots. But his stuff's just so good that as long as he's in the zone, his stuff's just gonna, you know, play, and it's gonna be tough for hitters to do anything against him. So, you know, 1.94 Sierra since taking over the closer role, that's in 15 innings. 19.7% swinging strike rate. I mean, the stuff's just phenomenal. 147 stuff plus. it's, you know, we always thought Abner Uribe was the closer of the future in Milwaukee. And I McGill's kind of older for, you know, where he's at in his career, but he definitely could be the closer of the future here, at least for the next 3 or 4 years, whenever if they decide to move on from Devin Williams.
Yeah, they still got 3 more years of control. And that's, I think, the biggest thing here is what happens when Devin Williams returns. Do they sort of let him set up and see how McGill performs with Williams in town? But I think that's going to be something interesting that we will consider after the All-Star break when Williams finally returns. But for now, Trevor McGill looking like one of the best closers in baseball. Move over to our next riser, and that's Tanner Scott of the Marlins. He's quietly put away the struggles that he had at the beginning of the year. I wouldn't say it's come with the supportive underlying metrics that you would want, but after looking washed to start the year, and I'm talking a 4.70 ERA through his first 7 2/3, that does not sound as bad as he pitched. Because I remember when he was pitching and it was terrible. So he really got lucky, honestly, during that time.
He did.
But since April 16th, zero earned runs, 20 innings, zero ERA. The strikeouts are coming back as he's recorded multiple strikeouts in each of his last 3 outings. And I think we can start feeling confident in Tanner Scott just in time for him to get traded at the trade deadline.
Yeah, the Marlins must be loving, the front office must be loving this. Because, he's put away kind of all those concerns. The thing, so he had a bit of a, I think it was a 6 or 7 day stretch in the early part of May where he didn't pitch. So since that, he's thrown 14.2 innings since that time, and he only has 4 saves, so that is not helping you out too much over, or, you know, pretty much a month of just having 4 saves. But he does have a 34% strikeout rate over that time span, 9.4% walk rate, which will definitely take, we'll take that from Scott, 0.68 whip, 2.44 Sierra, 18% swinging strike rate, 144 stuff plus. So it's, you know, that's all screams, you know, elite reliever. So he's back to where we thought, or at least where I thought he could be and where he should be. It's just the holds or the saves aren't there because it's this Marlins team has been, you know, dreadful all the year. So, you know, it's now to the point where I thought for sure Scott was going to go somewhere and probably just be a setup guy. And he probably, like, I would say 70%, that's probably where we're headed to him, you know, getting holds wherever he ends up next. But there are teams out there, there's contenders out there that do need a closer and Cubs. Could upgrade it. Yeah, Cubs, Rangers, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their thoughts are. And there's other teams as well. I think Scott could. He's pitching so well right now. I think he could be in the mix for a closing job wherever he ends up.
Totally. Yeah. But that's Tanner Scott. And I think we're watching, you know, the control and everything here. So when you said that he has a 9% walk rate. Yeah. That's it's nice to hear after that was the biggest concern early in the year and earlier in his career prior to last year's breakout. But that's Tanner Scott, our last riser. We got a tie between Yimi Garcia and Edwin Diaz. We just talked about Edwin Diaz. Right. And we talked a lot about Yimi Garcia last week. So we can just touch on these guys. I mean, Edwin Diaz retaking the closer role. That one's pretty self-explanatory. And Yimi Garcia taking over the closer role since Jordan Romano was placed on the IL. It has not been long, but he hasn't really done anything bad. He allowed two. When did he land on the IL, Romano?
It was about 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Been that long?
Maybe only a week. Yeah, I know. Okay. Garcia has at least 3 saves since then. But you know, it's just the whole body of work for Garcia this season has been so good. I mean, 39% K rate, 1.99 Sierra. It's just, I don't see how there's any way, or that's since May. Sorry. The whole season's been great, but I just don't see any way that Romano can come back and just push Garcia out of the closer role. It's just in general, we talked about the Blue Jays have a lot of hard decisions to make, but I feel like this one right now, I just don't see how you can remove Garcia if you're trying to, you know, work your way back into the playoffs right now. And
or even for the trade deadline, why would you not keep that's going to be the trade candidate in the closer role? And since taking over the closer role from Romano hasn't even pitched in June yet, which I thought he got injured much more recently, but it has been 2 weeks already. And since then, Yimi has pitched in five games. He's tossed 5 1/3 innings. He's gotten three saves. He struck out 11 batters to no walks, which is incredible. And he's allowed three earned runs, two of which came in, and actually all three of which came in outings during which he recorded a save. So yeah. I still feel very confident in him. And the 0.91 xFIP, which very small sample size, but when you have 11 strikeouts to no walks, I think you deserve better than a 5.06 ERA.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he gets some bad home run luck in those games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just been incredible this year. And it's another one. If they do end up trading, here's a guy like he's the best. If he goes to the Cubs, he's definitely the best closer option. Like, you know, there are teams that could trade for Jimmy Garcia and he is their best closer. I think in Texas, he would be the best option to close out games there. There's, you know, I'm not saying any, it's not like he just has experience from these three saves. He used to close out games for the Marlins back, you know, not that long ago. And yeah, I just think that between him and Scott, I think they're, those are the best options available, you know, unless like Mason Miller becomes available. That's, you know, kind of a pipe dream at this point. So, yeah, I mean, Garcia and Scott, I you want to roster them, and I don't know where they belong, you know, on the ranks, but you want to roster them and see where this thing goes, where things play out for them, because the upside just is so good with both of them.
Yep, and those are our risers. And as closers rise the ranks, others have to fall to accommodate them. So we'll discuss the three closers falling down the closer ranks this week, starting with James MacArthur, who continues to struggle. His last outing, he allowed three runs, two of which were earned as he couldn't find the zone. Across his last 13 2/3 innings since the beginning of May, he's got a 7.90 ERA and a strikeout rate that's like, what was it, 14%? 14.1%, a 1.68 whip. Really unfortunate. I mean, he's definitely been unlucky. He's got a 340 BABIP and a sub 50% left on base rate, which is almost unheard of. But nonetheless, he doesn't have the strikeouts to give you any sort of hope that he's going to turn things around. And right now, I'm sort of curious to see what the Royals do with their next save opportunity, because they did option Will Klein to the minors so that they could bring up Dan Altavilla, which that was a certainly a choice. I thought Will Klein might be able to sneak his way into that closer role, but it feels like they might not move away from MacArthur just yet. But if they do, who is somebody you're keeping an eye on?
No one on that roster. it's John Schreiber's been just terrible lately. They're gonna make a trade. I mean, that this is another team. This team is right in the middle of the playoff race, and Tanner Scott or I mean, go get both, honestly, if you really want to make a run. Yeah, I mean, Garcia or Scott easily become the closer there. You know, MacArthur has dealt with some bad luck, but it's just for me, the concerning thing is the strikeout rate just like disappearing. And, he's still, the swing and strike rate's not terrible. It's still, I think it was around like 14% since May. But the strikeout rate being down to 14% as well is just like, that's not cutting it when you have a 1.68 whip and 7.9 ERA. So, I think Kenley Jansen's another option. They were interested in Jansen this offseason, but they didn't want to deal with his contract, so they settled for Schreiber instead. So I wonder if Jansen could be back on the table with how well they've been playing as a team. But yeah, either way, MacArthur's probably got at best, you know, a month and a half left to close out games before the Royals make a move. But I think he's in the, you know, you can drop him, and it depends on the league context, but I'm still not giving up hope completely with him. It's just, it's been disappointing with where he was at, you know, a month ago when we were talking about him.
Yeah, the xFIP is still positive, but I expect them to take him out of the closer role at least for a little bit so that they can sort of get his confidence back, because I don't know, pitching how he's been pitching is not going to really solve itself if he continues to struggle with the long ball and other things like that. But that's James MacArthur. We'll move over to Raisel Iglesias, who continues to fall down the ranks, and it's likely directly caused by his falling strikeout rate, which is down to a career low 17.9%. This is a guy who was formerly in the mid-30s back in his heyday with the Angels, but he just continues to struggle despite putting up great ERAs and getting all the saves. So it's like, I don't know. This is a situation where you start weighing underlying metrics versus performance on the field.
Yeah, it's not so much that I'm not like concerned. I think he's, you know, if you have him, you're fine with him. ERA and WHIP have been great. It's just, yeah, the strikeout rate is like, what's going? Like, I know the stuff, the velo is kind of taking a downward turn. He's 34. He's getting up there, you know, age-wise, I guess. But, the strikeout rate at 17.9%, that's just so low for a closer. I don't know how long these ratios can stay at that level. So he's done an exceptional job with, you know, hard contact. You know, barrel rate's only at 1.4%. So he's got that going for him. But it's, yeah, I feel like the second half could just be a little bit rocky. And this Braves team has a lot of things going against them right now. And this would be, if their bullpen starts to struggle, that's like the, you know, that could be a really big warning sign for this Braves team and their chances to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, because their offense is already taking a huge step Austin back Ryan, and Las Acuna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Riley and Olson.
Yeah, Riley Olson. Albie's had a good game today, but he's been, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's you know, some concerns in Atlanta, and Iglesias has kept his head above water so far, but I just, yeah, I'm concerned what happens, you know, in the second half or when this luck starts to turn the other way.
That is Raisel Iglesias. And our last faller is Michael Kopech. He continues to fall. I've got to believe that he's not got much more room to fall. Is he at 29?
28.
Whoa. You got Rockies below him and who else?
I got Jason Foley below him.
That is rough.
Yeah.
Michael Kopech has been terrible since the beginning of May, and it's not like he was that much better before then, but since the beginning of May, 5.25 ERA. The strikeout rate is good, 28.3%. However, it comes with a 15% walk rate, which is not going to work, and it's led to a 1.83 whip. And I think the worst thing outside of him performing poorly is the White Sox are just so goofy with how they use him. They do not want to use him in the closer role, despite him clearly being the closer. He's got the majority of the team saves, 5 to the rest of the bullpen's 4, and they just continue to use him in the 8th inning as a high leverage guy and don't really save him. They use him for multiple innings, and it just doesn't really feel like it's working out. I would love to see Michael Kopech on another team. I do expect him to be traded, but right now I have completely given up until I see him in different colors.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on here, but yeah, first and foremost, the White Sox don't help either when it comes to wins or just usage, all that. It's been kind of a headache. The velo's gone down a little bit. I mean, he was like amped up at the beginning of the year throwing 100, and that, you know, got me very excited, and now he's sitting around 98, which is fine. That's cool and all, but he's not throwing his secondary, he's not throwing his slider or cutter that often. He's just really like, there's a lot of outings like after he struggles, I go and look at the Savant page, the player page, and it's like, you know, he threw 25 fastballs to one slider. It's like, I think we might need to, you know, mix it up a little bit more than that. Like, his fastball's good. It can be good, but like, that's, I don't know. It's he needs to go to a team that can, you know, has a good track record of developing relievers and pitchers in general. I hope he gets traded. I hope he gets out of there. And I think he can become a good holds option wherever he ends up. I don't think he's going to be a closer wherever he ends up. Maybe if things, you know, get bad wherever it is that he lands. But yeah, there's still something to like here. It's just not, I don't think it's going to work out with the White Sox. So until he's traded, I don't think he's really worth rostering.
Totally agree. And that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, the three closers rising Rick's ranks were Trevor McGill, Tanner Scott, and Yimi Garcia / Edwin Diaz. And the three closers moving down Rick's closer ranks were James MacArthur, Raisel Iglesias, and Michael Kopech. Next, we'll discuss our main topic as we check back in on early breakouts from April. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We're heading into our last section, the main topic, as we check back in on some of the relievers that caught our eye earlier in the season. So these are pitchers that performed really well in April, and we're sort of just looking how they've done since then and trying to get a better sense of what we should expect from them going forward. I made this list going through teams alphabetically on Fangraphs. So it starts with AL alphabetically and then NL alphabetically. So we'll just go in that order, starting with Justin Slayton, who pitched to a 0.52 ERA through April, 0.58 whip and a 23% strikeout rate. So he was really good. Since then, though, not good. 5.28 ERA and a similar sample size. However, the weird part here is that Slayton's underlying metrics suggest he's better now than he was in April. His strikeout rate has risen almost 6%. His xFIP is below 2 after being 3.27 through April. And I sort of feel like we should still trust Slayton despite the climbing ERA.
Yeah, I'm not ready to give up hope right now with Slayton. Because, yeah, overall, the body of work for this season is really good. You know, he could get, he could, I mean, PLV loves him. He's a big PLV. Oh, Tanner Scott. God. All right. Well,
what did he do?
He just gave up a 2-run home run to a walk off to JD Martinez. Well, at least Edwin Diaz got a win tonight.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, Diaz didn't allow a base runner and had a strikeout, and Tanner Scott walked one and then let up a home run.
Nice.
So just as we talk him up, there it goes. Of course. I guess he was due, though. Yeah, so back to Slayton anyway. You know, as a Red Sox fan, I do still, you know, I believe that he's their best reliever option, at least for, like, the second half when we're trying to figure out who gets saves there. I would imagine, I don't know, maybe Martin's still here by August. Maybe he's, I still think he could be traded. Jansen's definitely going to be traded. So that opens the door for Slayton. And I'm more inclined to back up that xFIP than the 5.2 ERA that he's had mm-hmm. over the past 15 innings. I think the swing and miss stuff's legit. He's got three good pitches. He could definitely be a sneaky closer option for those, you know, last 2 months of the season.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even consider that at all, but that's definitely going to be something I keep an eye on as we near the deadline. Definitely put Slayton on your watch list if you're trying to fix your closer role after July. We'll stay in the division, obviously, and go over to the rival Yankees, where they have Luke Weaver, who they transitioned from a starter into a reliever, and it's gone very well. And in April, he actually didn't really break out, though. If you look at his season-long numbers, it feels like a guy that was a early breakout. In April, he had a 3.20 ERA with a 21.8% strikeout rate. But then since April, Luke Weaver has had a 2.11 ERA and a 32% strikeout rate. That's a very different pitcher than he was in April. So I think this is sort of a flip-flop of a lot of the other guys we'll discuss, but I think Weaver still fits the mold and the vibe of like a breakout reliever that has had success early in the year. And I think the fact that the latter sample size shows a better xFIP as well makes me believe that this is the true version of Weaver, and the Yankees have really done something different with him. He's got a 2.76 xFIP since April and a 0.70 whip as well. So I think Luke Weaver is actually an elite relief arm, and that's pretty interesting to see him take this career path.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, he's the one reliever, you know, I think he's ahead of, you know, pretty well ahead of Canley and Ian Hamilton, because, you know, that's going to be the Yankees are going to add relievers. I think they add at least two impact relievers. They're definitely in win now mode, and I don't see them wasting any time here to put the best team out on the field as possible. So they're going to add some relievers. And I think Weaver's the one guy who can stay and be a holds option for throughout the rest of the season, the way he's been pitching. I mean, it's nothing really to, you know, we talked about his pitch mix changes and the cutter usage now is way up, and that's really helped him, you know, become this dominant reliever that I don't think anyone really expected this to happen, but crazy things do happen when you take a starter like him. I remember Drew Pomeranz his first couple of years in the bullpen. He's just, you know, that switch from the rotation to the bullpen can do wonders.
Yeah, Totally. Yeah, that's Luke Weaver. We'll head over to the Rays, where Garrett Clevenger has had a really successful season this year. Through April, he had a 2.45 ERA and a 31% strikeout rate, though he was sporting a 1.55 whip. However, since then, 2.76 ERA, so it's risen a little. The strikeout rate, though, has fallen down to 26.8%. And that's followed by the rise of his xFIP to over 4. I think Clevenger is solid. I don't think he's a sub 3 ERA guy. Uh-huh. But if he is out here sporting like a 27% strikeout rate and a mid 3s ERA, that's something I could definitely get behind.
Yeah, like you said, I think the walk rate keeps him from being any higher than, you know, where we can currently rank him. It's and a lot of that walk rate comes from early on in the season, but he has lately, he's been struggling as well. And the strikeouts and the whiff ability has been kind of decreasing here. So I think he's better than Poche. He's their best left-handed option. They still have some team control with him. So he probably stays in Tampa Bay through the deadline. And yeah, who knows? I mean, with Tampa Bay, we haven't really seen the Rays be a seller at the deadline in a while now. So, mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see who all is on the market for them and what opens up in that bullpen in August, because, yeah, Clevenger could be a big benefactor from that. But I think he's just more of a – he's an okay lefty who has mm-hmm. a couple swing and miss pitches, but it's not really anything to get too excited about unless he brings that walk rate down from 13.4%.
Yeah, he feels just like a solid, like slightly above average reliever rather than somebody that has closer potential.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Somebody who does have closer potential, though, is Yimi Garcia, and he's actually taken over the closer role to realize his potential. Through April, Garcia had a 0.68 ERA and a 34% strikeout rate. And despite that ERA rising to 3.21 since April, it's come with a rise in his strikeout rate as well, up to 38.9%. That's also seen his xFIP drop below 3. So I think not only can we believe the April numbers from Garcia, but also we can have faith that he might be even better. He might be a guy that is 35% plus strikeout rate and what I believe to be a somebody worthy of a sub 3 ERA.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. He's just been, we talked about him a lot, so I'll try to keep this one short. But yeah, he should be a sub 3 ERA option. The strikeout rate's the biggest surprise, and he started showing that in the second half of last year, and it's just carried over and then some. So yeah, it's not really a surprise anymore with him. He's been doing it since, you know, the second half of last year. So this is for real. And yeah, it will be interesting to see how the second half plays out for him this year.
Yeah, I think as long as that sweeper continues to find success, so should Yimi Garcia. And he was also on that episode with Luke Weaver when we discussed pitch mix changes. Yep. I think that was 2 episodes ago. So if anybody's interested in hearing about the pitch mix changes, we also had Kyle Bland on, so that's one of our best episodes of the year. For sure. So go check that one out. We'll continue moving through this list as we head over to Hunter Gaddis, who we discussed very early on in the year as we were noticing some changes as he moved from the rotation to the bullpen. Through April, he had an even 3 ERA and a 27.9% strikeout rate. Since then, 0.55 ERA, though his strikeout rate has fallen dramatically to 19.3%. So he's sort of become the Toby version of a relief. However, he's still finding success, though I think he's more pedestrian than what his early numbers would suggest.
Yeah, that's a good this is a good one for this exercise, I feel, because you know, if you just look at the numbers on as a whole, it looks like he's just dominating throughout the season. But yeah, he's getting a little bit lucky now, and that strikeout rate being below 20% is not great. You know, especially the next guy on this list, Kate Smith's definitely outperforming him in pretty much mm-hmm. every category. So Gaddis is still probably the more trustworthy reliever that, you know, as far as the Guardians go, they're giving him the ball in the 7th-8th inning. But Smith's been better, and I still think both Gaddis and Smith are better options than Scott Barlow, and they should both be fine for holds leagues going forward. But yeah, that's a strikeout rate. It's concerning. I'm a little surprised by that, too. I thought he would always, I didn't think he was going to be a 30-plus guy, but mm-hmm. I thought he'd be around 25 or so. So that's 19.3 over the last 16 innings. It's not great.
No, we'll have to see if he turns that around and can revert to being a guy that can post decent strikeout rates. You mentioned Cade Smith, though, and he was paired with Gattis when we were discussing some early breakouts in the Cleveland bullpen. I think Nick Sandlin was a part of that as well.
Yep.
But through April, Cade Smith had a 2.57 ERA and a 36.7% strikeout rate. The strikeout rate's fallen to 32%, which is still really good, but the ERA has come with it. 1.10 ERA in his last 16 and a third. His xFIP has fallen. His whip's at 0.73. Cade Smith is looking like a really legit option, and I think it makes me even more confident that this is not like a sort of breakout guy that had to shift roles or had pitched somewhere else. The fact that this is his rookie season, and he's sort of like, I don't know, entering with so much success gives me more confidence that it's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, for the whole season, he's been incredible. Mm-hmm. 35.4% CSW. PLV, 5.07 PLV is a little down on him. I wonder if we can get an explanation from Kyle on this.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the four-seamer is just kind of average. And this splitter usually doesn't grade out too well when it comes to PLV, so I guess that's a big factor. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing really to complain about with Cade Smith. And as far as rookie relievers go, I think he's probably the best one right now this season. I think he would be the top rookie, but I might be
Mason Miller count?
Oh, Mason Miller. Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of guys. I always think of guys who have debuted. Yeah, but yeah, Miller, I guess technically. Yeah. Not Yamamoto and Imanaga. That always bugs me that they can win rookie of the year, kind of, but I get it.
Yeah. So that's Cade Smith. So I think we can be confident Smith and maybe less so in Hunter Gattis. We'll stick in the AL Central and talk about Jason Foley, who really excited us earlier in the year with increased velocity that dissipated very quickly. But through April, Foley had a 1.32 ERA and a 23% strikeout rate, which is higher than he was at last year. But since April, Foley has a 4.91 ERA. His xFIP, though, has fallen, but so has his strikeout rate, down to 14.6%. And I think that tells us everything we need to know about Foley. Like, he's a big ground ball guy, but he relies so heavily on balls in play that it's going to be rough for him to maintain, you know, beneficial ERAs, and he's going to actively hurt you in the strikeout department. And then on top of all of that, because he's a guy who relies so much on balls in play, his whip's going to be inflated no matter what his walk rate is, because those ground balls are going to turn into hits more often than fly balls would.
Yeah, just definitely been disappointing after that first week or two, where it's like, oh, he's throwing 100 with his sinker, he's getting swings and misses, and now he's back to being the guy he was last year, and he's not having the same luck that he had last year. So it's led to, you know, that ERA being at 4.91 over the last 11 innings. He is what he is. I mean, he's a ground ball guy. He shouldn't be a closer. And we kind of talked about, you know, looking forward to the trade deadline, guys who might be available. I think Foley should be one of those guys that I think a team would overpay just because of the stuff is intriguing. He does throw hard. He does, you know, his slider's not terrible. There's something there. I think another team maybe could unlock something. So I think you could get a surprisingly good prospect or two for him. I don't think with Detroit, he can't be the closer there. They don't have another option, so he's kind of stuck in that role. And yeah, it's just not what he should be doing.
Yeah. All right, and we can wrap up the American League with Mason Miller, who really burst onto the scene in April with a 1.35 ERA and a 54.9% strikeout rate. He had a negative FIP during that time and a 0.91 xFIP, so he was looking absolutely untouchable. Since then, though, a little bit more touchable, 3.24 ERA for Miller and a 43.5% strikeout rate. That's still an elite strikeout rate. He's got a 1.93 xFIP as well, though I think it's what we see here is that he's not like far and away the number one relief pitcher in baseball, though I think he still is in that territory or in the conversation at the very least, but he's not going to be a guy that carries a, you know, 1.50 ERA and a 50% strikeout rate all year. He's probably going to settle around still great numbers, like a 45% strikeout rate and a sub 3 ERA, but I don't think it's going to be like an otherworldly, you know, bonkers rookie season.
Yeah, what's Nick's like go-to saying? Like, Mason Miller is dope, and you should feel dope for rostering him or whatever. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about him. It has been weird lately. It's like every time I feel like I look at a box score with him, it feels like he's like allowing runs, but it hasn't been that bad. The one thing that is frustrating, and we knew this was going to happen, he has 8 saves in April and he has 4 since the start of May. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the A's for you. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's, he had a run of 8 saves between April 9th and April 30th. And now 4 cents. it's just baseball. Yeah. I don't know if he'll have a run like that with those 8 saves, but he should be closer to, I mean, the A's are not that, I mean, they are bad. I can't say they're not that bad, but like they're, but they, there should be more opportunities here for him. And I still think he's a top 10 option moving forward.
Sure. All right, we can head into the National League and discuss Reed Garrett of the Mets. He was one of the earliest breakouts and surprises in April with a 0.57 ERA through that month with a 45.9% strikeout rate. And he looked absolutely dominant. Since then, not so much. Reed Garrett since April has a 5.50 ERA and it comes with a 29.8% strikeout rate. So that's a 16% drop in strikeout rate for the right-hander for the Mets. The xFIP is still pretty good, 3.61, which suggests that the 5.50 ERA he's had since April is undeserved. However, it is clear that he's not going to be like this new breakout reliever that comes out of nowhere and is absolutely dominant, though I still feel confident that he can be like a low 3 ERA guy with a 30% strikeout rate.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still really good. A lot of that comes from he had this one outing against San Francisco where he let up 5 earned runs. And you mean take that? I mean, you can't just take that away. But if you did take that away, it's like everything else. He's been pretty consistent throughout the year, and he's been pretty solid in June so far. 2 earned runs, 9 strikeouts and 4.2 innings. The swing and miss stuff's still there. He's getting a lot of strikeouts still. And yeah, April was definitely a fluke, but I think he's still a pretty, you know, pretty solid, reliable option for them. Trying to figure out the Mets bullpen right now, because I feel like Nunez has become their second best reliever behind Diaz, and him and Garrett are the two, you know, should be the two setup options there. But yeah, it's, you know, I still think Garrett, it's weird because he's one of those late breakout guys who he doesn't throw particularly hard either. So that always, you know, isn't, you know, the best foundation to build on here, but I think he's still sneaky good if he's available and holds leagues. I think if people got frustrated and dropped him, I think he's a solid option still.
Definitely. All right, we can go to Matt Strom, who's got the lowest ERA amongst left-handed pitchers in baseball, and he was pretty good for the past couple of years in Boston and Philly, but this feels like his true breakout, as he was a, you know, low 3 to mid 3 ERA guy over the past couple of years. And now he's got a 0.67 ERA for the season. Through April, he had a 1.64 ERA and a 38% strikeout rate. And that would really feel like, oh, how is he going to top this? Well, since then, he's yet to allow a run in 16 innings. He's got a nice 0.69 whip and a 2.07 xFIP. And that comes with an increase in his strikeout rate as well to 39.7%. And I think Matt Strom is probably the most underrated reliever in baseball because he looks like the best left-handed option in the whole league.
Yeah, I think that I could agree with that. If it wasn't for the fact that he doesn't get a ton of holds, he would be, you know, top 3 in the holds list easily. But they still use him in, you know, different ways. I'd like to use him earlier.
They use him in the 6th inning. I hate that.
I know. It's kind of like that old like Andrew Miller ish type usage, but. There's still a lot to like, and he's still very valuable in pretty much any league since he's not getting a ton of holds or saves. It's almost surprising he only has 3 wins based on how they use him in tight games early on. I feel like he should have more wins even. But he's going to have more holds than he had last year. He only had 11 last year. He's at 7 already, so he'll match that or go past that at least. And yeah, he's been one of the most, you don't hear about him a lot, but he's been one of the best relievers in baseball this year.
Yeah, like absolutely ridiculous. And I don't hear anybody talk about him ever other than saying that he looks like Nicolas Cage, which I don't really think he looks like Nicolas Cage.
No, I see it like a little bit like the Con Air Nicolas Cage look, but like that, yeah, it's kind of a stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. The Tyler Glass now. Yeah. And the Oppenheimer guy.
Cillian Murphy.
That one makes sense. Yeah. That one makes sense. This one, not so much. We'll move over to the NL Central, where Fernando Cruz is having a breakout season. Through April, he had a 1.59 ERA and a 48.8% strikeout rate. He was looking absolutely dominant. Since then, though, a little bit unlucky, 5.12 ERA, but he still got a 39.8% strikeout rate. That's a 9% drop, but that's still very elite. And it comes with a 2.38 xFIP, which suggests that the 5.12 ERA he had was very unlucky. I still think Fernando Cruz is elite, but as you talked about earlier, the Reds don't seem to want to trust him outside of the eighth inning, so I think he's just going to be locked into that role, and I would feel confident that he's going to be at the very least a great strikeout option.
Yeah, I think with him it's a case of the, you know, he has the best splitter in baseball, so with that you're going to get crazy highs and also crazy lows, because there's going to be a high walk rate and
you know, volatility.
Yeah, then there's going to be home runs, high walk rate, but the strikeout rate is crazy. The swing and miss stuff is, you know, top three in baseball. It's just, yeah, dealing with the ups and downs. And I don't know, maybe it's too much of a headache for the Reds, but he is so fun to watch, especially when he's on. He's just like a souped up like Kirby Yates, where it's like, you know, splitter with that splitter. It's really, I mean, I would love to see him closing out games. He's better than Alexis Diaz, but you know, for now, he's just a really good holds option that is, you know, there are ups and downs, but I feel like he's more up than down. And when the downs do happen, it is rough, because he had that patch where he had like 7 earned runs or something in a week or 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, you kind of just bite the bullet there and just move on, because when he's good, he's in another one of those like grooves right now where you want to have him rostered.
Yep. All right. We can stick in the NL Central and discuss Brian Hudson of the Brewers, who through April had a 0.55 ERA and a 28.8% strikeout rate. And I was feeling pretty good, because I had called him out long before he was even on the Brewers. And he's been really dominant. And so much so that since April, he's got a 1.37 ERA, which is an increase from that first month, but is still awesome. But then the strikeout rate all the way up to 35.1%. Nice. That's a near 7% increase, and it's just like bonkers for a guy that throws what he throws. I mean, he's throwing like low 90s. It's like, I don't know. It's so much deception, but he's still got great stuff despite not throwing hard. But I have to feel that Brian Hudson is going to be dominant the whole year.
I mean, yeah, at this point, I don't have any concerns about him. I mean, everything's red on his player page here. It's I mean, he's really changed, and we talked about him too. He started, what was his deal? He started throwing his four seamer more or something, maybe the sweeper more. I have to go back. But I mean, he's got a 5.62 PLV on his
sweeper. He added a sweeper.
Yeah. And the sweeper's been so good for him. But the four seamer, I mean, yeah, he throws 92, but he's 6'8", and he's got this like lanky, weird, kind of deceptive, not sidearm, but more like three quarters delivery. That's just, it's funky enough where it keeps hitters off balance. So yeah, it's not going to happen, but just to see like Felix Bautista get traded for Devin Williams. So then you have 3 6'8" guys coming at you. It's in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning with Hudson, McGill, and Bautista. That would be just, you know, just gimmicky MLB The Show type stuff for me. But I mean, Hudson and McGill are just, you know, way different how they do it, but they've been dominant nonetheless.
Yeah, pretty awesome to watch for somebody that I called out a while ago. I'll take my victory lap now. We'll stick in the NL Central for one last guy, Jojo Romero, who sort of broke out last year, but he's taken things to another level in 2024. Through April, Romero has a 1.23 ERA and a 30.8% strikeout rate. Since then, 2.45 ERA and a 21.9% strikeout rate. I would say that's pretty concerning, though he's still finding a lot of success and is the top setup option in St. Louis. I don't think we can really expect that he's going to return to that 30% strikeout rate or be a guy that holds a sub 2 ERA for the whole year. Though I would not be surprised by like a 2.75 ERA and like a 24% strikeout rate, which is very awesome as long as he's, you know, one of the league leaders in holds.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he is. He was, at least as of last week. He's got 19 holds so far, which is crazy at this point. He's already got 19 holds.
Yeah.
When you think about it, there's usually only like three guys who make it to 30.
Yeah, he's holds. On pace for 40.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's been I noticed the strikeout rate dip. I think he could still be closer to 30%. He's got a 33% CSW. So he is missing bats, and he was doing the same thing last year. He was a CSW merchant last year in a small sample size. But yeah, probably not. You know, he's not going to be a 30 plus K rate guy, but he's, you know, the walk rate is awesome. The control is just really good here. I think he's like a 2.5 ERA around one for the whip. And yeah, I think he's like 25 to 30% K rate type. So, I mean, yeah, you'll take that if he's getting you 30 plus holds.
Exactly. All right. And now we'll wrap things up in the NL West. We got just two guys here, starting with Robert Suarez of the Padres. Through April, Suarez had a 0.71 ERA and a 24% strikeout rate. And it really felt like, oh man, this is the year he breaks out. And sense has been proven right, as since April, Suarez has a 0.54 ERA and a 28.3% strikeout rate. His whip is also 0.54. And oddly enough, his xFIP has risen slightly since then, which is sort of weird considering the strikeout rate rose so much. Nonetheless, he's looked really good, and it doesn't seem to matter that he's just going only fastballs.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously going to be some negative regression here, but I don't think it's going to be I don't think he's going to go back to where his xFIP is at. I think you're probably looking at like a 2 to 3 ERA guy at the end of the season. The strikeout rate, I do wonder how much he can sustain that with just the fastball only usage. The whiff rate's only at 23% on the season. So yeah, I do have some doubts there. But I'm not too concerned with everything else. He hasn't had a ton of saves lately, but that's just the way the Padres are playing. And, June's been quiet for him so far. But, you know, until the cracks start showing, I don't really have anything to be concerned about here.
Mm-hmm. I love this Padres bullpen. Honestly, when they went in the offseason, that was like the only thing that they focused on. And they got like Yuki Matsui, Aniel De Los Santos, Wandy Peralta, and Woosuk Goh, who's gone now. But those three guys are like, they were solid to start the year and they've been fine this year, but like they don't even need them because they turned Jeremiah Estrada, Robert Suarez, and Adrian Morejon into like three of the best relievers in baseball. And it's dope that now it's like you have like these two young guys who are breaking out, Robert Suarez, who's figuring things out in the majors, yeah. And then also like three veterans that you can turn to and trust in any situation. Like that's awesome.
Yeah, and even like De Los Santos has pitched pretty well for them for the most part. And I did see yesterday that they are in the market. They're looking for a right-handed reliever. And
why?
I guess you could use one more. I don't know. Estrada has been the command is starting to get a little shaky again. I don't like it. It's annoying because he could be so good. De Los Santos is fine, but they could definitely upgrade there. I mean, Stephen Kolek's probably the one guy you could easily upgrade.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't expect them to go crazy for, you know, getting a right-handed, you know, relief option, but they could definitely use another, you know, steady setup option there.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I love that Padres bullpen right now.
It's fun. Yeah.
And the last guy we have is in San Francisco, Ryan Walker, quietly having a really good season. I never hear anybody talk about Ryan Walker, and he's been really good this year for the Giants. He, through April, Ryan Walker had a 2.81 ERA and a 30% strikeout rate. Since then, he's got a 2.33 ERA, a 1.68 xFIP, and a 34.2% strikeout rate. And that is really awesome. Ryan Walker has looked really good, and I think the Giants are going to continue to trust him. And I don't see any reason why we also wouldn't trust him, considering the underlying metrics suggest a continuation of his performance. And he was good last year. He just didn't really notice it. He had a 3.23 ERA. He was just opening a lot of games, and he didn't have the elite strikeout minus walk ratio. I mean, he had a 20.5% rate last year, which, I mean, now that I'm looking at it, that is elite. And this year he's got it up to 28%. So I actually have a lot of confidence in Ryan Walker, and he throws sort of funky too.
Yeah, he does. He's a little sidewinder, not like Tyler Rogers, but
no, he's like John Schreiber. The weird thing he does is he steps all the way across the mound.
Oh, he's one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He starts on the left side of the rubber and ends up like way on the right side.
Yeah. I guess I do see that when he throws. Yeah.
He's so funky.
It's coming at you from a weird angle. It's a little bit like you mentioned him opening games last year. It's nice in those leagues where starting pitching eligibility matters to you, because he's been a great SPRP. If you need holds, he's been one of the best options there. I do, you know, I have no concerns with him. I 34.6% CSW. You talk about the Padres bullpen, like being, you know, you love that bullpen. This Giants bullpen, I think top to bottom, is really, really good. Really don't have any. I mean, Luke Jackson could definitely be pitching better, but we've seen. I mean, if he starts to
throw that's your well, last option.
Yeah, if he starts to throw well, I mean, Randy Rodriguez is electric. Eric Miller throws 90. This guy from the left side throws 97.
Wow, I need to watch more Giants.
Taylor Rogers. The Rogers brothers have both been really good this year, right? And then you got Walker, and it's really like Duvall and like Luke Jackson have been like the guys kind of holding them back, but Duvall's been better lately. So yeah, this bullpen, I know we said the Guardians were the best bullpen in baseball last week, but I do think this Giants bullpen could match them eventually. I think, and even I'm not gonna butcher his name. Sean Jelly.
Yeah.
He's been really good. He's been like, I thought he was, you know, not gonna.
You know how tall he is?
He's like 6'10", right? Yeah.
He's 6'11". Actually,
6'11". Yeah.
Humongous.
And he's been
get him on the Brewers.
Yeah, that's another. He doesn't throw hard either. He's just one of the. He's just kind of. It's just got to be funky seeing the 6'11" guy throwing.
I mean,
baseballs at you.
The extension's got to be crazy. What's his extension? Not that he's 75th percentile. Yeah. That is surprising.
But what you know what he has been? He's got 99 percentile ground ball rate, 95 percentile walk
rate.
He's
so over the top, and he throws a sinker.
He's just throwing percent of the time. Sinker that gets crazy
straight down to the ground.
Exactly. So he's just guys are just pounding the ball into the ground on him. And even the knuckle curve's been a little bit better this year for 40% whiff rate. So yeah, they just like all around this bullpen's really fun. And if the Giants do make any sort of run and make any sort of playoff bid, I think it's this bullpen that carries them.
Yeah, that's how they won back in the day. They had the Santiago Casilla and Jeremy Affeld and Javier Lopez and
Sergio Romo. Guy
I can name a million. Yeah, I could name a million guys in that bullpen. Brian Wilson. But yeah, back in the early 2010s, that was how they won everything. Good pitching and defense. And I wouldn't say their defense is good, but it's better than it was last year. And their rotation's going to get some help with Robbie Ray and Cobb coming back. And Snell at some point. I think the Giants could make a run here. But yeah, it's all thanks to the pitching. But that will wrap up our check-in on early breakouts. I'll run through the names as fast as I can. Will time me. Ready, set, go. Justin Slayton, Luke Weaver, Garrett Clevenger, Yimi Garcia, Hunter Gaddis, Cade Smith, Jason Foley, Mason Miller, Reed Garrett, Matt Strom, Fernando Cruz, Brian Hudson, JoJo Romero, Robert Suarez, and Ryan Walker. That was one breath. That was difficult. All right. Good. But thank you. That will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you've got going on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Just as I mentioned before, I'm putting out three lists a week, the closing time on Tuesdays, holds on Thursdays, and saves plus holds on Fridays. So look for those, as well as our reliever ranks team putting out a daily article talking about the previous night's game action when it comes to relievers.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com and also on PitcherList, where I do the weekend editions of PitcherList's daily podcast, the First Pitch Podcast, as well as the Monday editions of the aforementioned Reliever Ranks article. I also write for Baseball HQ. You can find my work doing playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks over there. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.